week we were discussing the requirement of a moch. Mishnah, the Gemara, the other Masechta Nida, spoke about sometimes the possibility of having to do a more effective type of a hefsek tahara. The Gemara called the bedikas ben hashmashos. The question is, even does such a thing ever exist? And if it ever exists, does it practically ever exist for us? So that was a big machlokes in the Tanoi, machlokes in the Rambam, machlokes in the Rishonim. But is there even such an entity called a bedikas called ben hashmashos? The Gemara focused on the principle called a ra yom rishon. A woman just started to see today, and now she's ready to do hefsek tahara. So that's the highest level of hefsek tahara that's necessary. It's called mayana pasuach. It's our uterus literally open. She just started to bleed today. If it's a ra yom rishon, then maybe we require a bedikas called ben hashmashos, which for us practically today translates to be the moch, placing a bedikas cloth in that area and leaving it there for the duration of ben hashmashos. So is that ever really a case of ra yom rishon? So according to the Rashba, the whole thing doesn't exist. We don't even paskin like that fit in the Gemara. And even within those rishonim that we do paskin like that, we watered it down because man is that so unlikely to ever have a ra yom rishon. Maybe if you have a steer in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam, a woman's in the middle of counting, and then she gets thrown off by having her ears down in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam, so the Shach said that's called the ra yom rishon. But as we pointed out at the end of the show this week, it's very unlikely for that to happen, because even though it's very likely for her to have steers in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam, they're usually going to be ksamim, which is probably not a yom rishon anyway. Or they're going to be bedikah cloths, which according to many possible is also not a ra yom rishon. A real ra yom rishon, she gets a flow. She's all of a sudden starting to flow a lot of blood. So we said, she's really flowing a lot of blood. Unlikely she's going to be ready to have sikta anyway that day. So we're talking about a very, very small window of an actual real bona fide loch. Nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch does quote already from the days of the rishonim practice that we insist that, at least we try to insist that all women should do mochs all the time. Even though the odds of having a real royal rishon are almost nil, nevertheless, as an extra precaution, the Midrash Yisrael has been to recommend that women do mochs, even under normal circumstances. We shouldn't have any shadows. Women should always know. That's how Shiva Nikiyam begins, to avoid any complications, any confusion, as a low plug. The question is just how far this minute goes. How much do we have to be machmir in this minute? So the Pesukim can tell us that there are many women who maybe shouldn't be following this minute. Many women who have irritations in that area. It becomes very difficult for them to do moch. And sometimes moch can cause more problems than themselves. The whole goal of the moch is to avoid all shadows. Any question, what happens? The woman is irritated in that area. She sticks a moch in there, and after her half hour takes it out, and there's blood on it. The blood was caused by the moch. So you have to be very wary about that. So that's why Rabbanim will try to guide women properly, a little bit on a case-by-case basis. So the starting point in Hilchos Nida is that we recommend that women should do mochs. We try to encourage them to do mochs. But if there are unique circumstances, so then the Rav should be consulted, and the Rav may tell her, don't do moch this month, the Rav may tell her, don't do moch for the next couple of months, don't do moch until we rediscuss it in a little while. Again, it's going to be a little bit of a tailor-made psach, but again, only because the whole thing is not a real bit anyway, the whole thing is not a bit teres minig, so you have to be careful about this. If for whatever reason a woman forgot to do a moch, a woman who should have been doing a moch forgot to do a moch, then everybody agrees we're not going to disqualify the hefsek tahara. But the evet is still okay as long as the hefsek tahara was done in the pashkia, the proper manner. The moch is something that should be on our radar screen, but in terms of being something that's absolutely kuma, clearly it's for us it's not going to be. There is a question in the poskim, even aniach that we're going to do moch, so in that one far-fetched case where a moch is really necessary, how is the moch practically supposed to be done? So the goal of the moch, as we spoke about already last week, is that it's supposed to be the proof positive that there's no more bleeding. That's, you can't get a greater riot than that. She's putting it before she takes it, after it says, ain't lecha proof gadol mizeh, that she's not bleeding anymore. The question is, is that really true? Does it really physically do the job? So there is a machlekes acharonim, how efficient this moch is supposed to be in order to really qualify as a moch. So the chavis das, in his back of Hilchos Nida by the Baal HaNesivos, Chavos Da'as says, with a moch, the word moch, like a rag, is a moch, muchen, or rags. So the Chavos Da'as says, what a moch is supposed to be, is that the area is supposed to be literally almost like stuffed up with a cloth. You're supposed to take, almost rags, almost like something put in the entire area, and then it's impossible for any blood to ever slip by. That's the moch that Chazal described. That's the moch that the Rishonim are describing. According to the Chavis Das, that's not exactly what women do with man hazef. Woman takes a little bit of cloth, nothing bigger than a regular bit of cloth. It's a regular bit of cloth and puts it and leaves it. I said, Malcolm, the Chavis Das would say, that's a moch. That's just another bedikah. The moch is that the area is completely closed off with muchen, with rags, with shvatas, to make sure that there's no blood whatsoever that's emanating from that point. So according to Chavis Das, we're not even sure that our mochs even meet the criteria of mochs. Now, we can either get upset about that or we can ignore that. So if we really held that mochs were necessary to eat right there, then we'd probably be a little bit weary about this. But since we're sure the mochs are not really necessary. Since the mochs are not necessary, we're not, we're almost looking the other way at some of the mochs that are done bismat as that. The sticking of the deep cloth in, according to the Chavis Das, probably wouldn't meet the requirement of a real super duper moch anyway. The Kiveg is bothered with the same question as the Chavis Das is bothered with. He says, how does the moch really prove such absolute certainty? So Kiveg says, you have to put the moch in very, very, very far inside. Put it in as far, further than you would put a Hefzik Tara in, further than you would put a regular Bdika in, then and only then is the moch going to be an absolute proof. Between you and me, we don't do that either. So, as we already spoke when we talked about Hefzik Taras, a lot of the women today, and in the old days also, the Yosef testified that he spoke to some of the women, they told him, it's impossible, you can't put Niklots in so far, it's going to hurt, it's going to cause. The Beis Yosef quoted that the Nasha Pichos, the wise women, told him, and we saw this Beis Yosef together a few weeks ago, the Nasha Pichos told the Beis Yosef that if you're going to tell us to put the Niklots in further, it's going to cause more problems, because it's going to cause us to get to bleed. So it's very hard to tell women to put the Mochen even deeper than you put it in the Hefzik Tara. I think we have more people from Rehov Yerushalayim than we have from Bremen County. So if you ask from Kiveg, if you can insist on putting them before so far, that goof is going to cause problems. And therefore, our most bismanazet are not as efficient as we would have expected them to be. That's the bad news. The good news is we probably don't need them anyway. So it's a little bit of a give and take in terms of the most. So if a moch would have been needed, a real bona fide roya risha of the cholodeus, we would have tried to figure out how to do most a little bit more efficient than we're doing them. Since the whole thing is almost a minig, it's a chumrah. Al tito shtar simecha, follow the minig of the benos Yisrael from Tevye Teres to do most. Whatever the minig is, the minig bismanazah is that women usually just take a bdika cloth, they put it inside, leave it inside, and shut. Just as almost a practical note. So different bdika cloths come with that a little string, a little edge of the bdika cloth to be able to easily pull it out. The reason why they do that is for the women to do mochs. Because if you do a moch and you leave it in, so it may be hard to pull it out. So it's supposed to help them a little bit. Most women, I'm not sure that all the women know that piece of information. That's why very often I'll get a bedikah from somebody, and they use that. These are the ones, I think now even they make all of them with the strings. It used to be that some of them were with the strings and without the strings. Not literally a string, it's just you see a bedikah cloth, it's the bedikah cloth. And then the edge of the bedikah cloth, there's a little white strip of cloth that's going down. That's not the halachic reason. That's there just for practical, to make it a little bit easier to take the moch out. When we talk about doing a moch, whatever minig we're doing in terms of this moch, how long should this moch be in for? So the lashon of the Rishonim, the Mishnah Berurah is, it should be in for Menash Moshos, which of course begs the question, how long exactly is Menash Moshos? So yesh v'yesh. If you look at some of the kits of Hilchos Nida books, they write a lashon, something along the following lines, that you should put the bedikah cloth in, and you should leave it in for as long as you would consider Menash Moshos to be Motzei Shabbos. So whenever you would make Avdol Motzei Shabbos, that's how long the moch should be in. That could be very long. It could be 72 minutes. It could be for briskets, 50 minutes. Well, an hour could be a long, long time. So the Messiah that I have is that for mochs, you don't have to be so machmer or benetans, Mutzei Shabbos. And Rabbi Willick has told me that the home moch is that minig anyway. It's man is that we don't really need it. And not only do we not need it, it's probably not even being done properly, the moch. So the whole thing is a little bit towards minig, so we can take a very, very short version of what Benash Moshos is. So how long is a shortened version of Benash Moshos? So I remember right before I got married, so I asked Rabbi Willick, if I'm not mistaken, he said 20 minutes is already Benash Moshos for the purpose of the moch. And then I think somebody else told me that he said 25 minutes. So then I saw in an article I think that he wrote 20 to 25 minutes, I guess. Somewhere in that area. Again, that
That's a problem. In our shul, we try l'chilchila to start Meir in the wintertime, 25 minutes after Shkia, you know, on Friday night. Because that's a proxy when the early Benesh Moshes is really over. Again, to l'chilchila, we say Be'erach 25 minutes or so. That's good enough for this type of a halacha slash minute. There is another interesting shiloh that comes up in terms of a moch, and that's like Uduchus Nida, and that's the Uduchus carrying on Shabbos. The post came over that when a woman has a mochin, either she has the mochin on Friday, going into Friday night, or she has the mochin going into Motzei Shabbos, and now she wants to walk in the area where there's no Eruv, would that be a problem? Maybe the moch is considered to be carrying. There's a whole new problem of Motzei Shabbos. So, Lo Shemada does something. That's what some post came right. Zalman writes, he says, women have been doing mochs for thousands of years. It's an age old minute. We shayim quote it. The Gemara talks about it. Women have been doing mochs, and nobody was ever ma'orer that a woman has to be careful that you shouldn't be walking outside the street where there's no Eruv. So, doesn't that tell us something about this? So, one could argue, it doesn't tell us that anything. Women, who is woman? This man doesn't have women take walks Friday night, take walks with Sesha. Where were the women walking? They were home. So, and worst comes to worst, they went across the street, they were still in the Eruv. So it wasn't such a common thing. The women are walking in a place where there's no Eruv. Shmashmas. So Shlomo Zalman thought that, no, that the fact that no one was ever Ma'ira such a chumra in so many thousands of years, the stomach, that's indicative of the fact that it's probably not true. Why is it not true? Why it's carrying? Maybe since the halacha, the minna requires it, was considered to be almost like a tachshit. The halacha is that any time that a person puts on something that's serving a purpose, we just spoke about this on Shabbos Ben Chameya, last week was about tzitzis. A person's wearing tzitzis, a person's wearing have a button, so the button is serving a purpose. You know, I'm not buttoning my jacket right now, or I have other things, I'm wearing glasses, it's considered to be tachshit. Tachshit doesn't only mean something that's beautiful. Tachshit means something that's serving the body, something that's accomplishing something, so it's considered to be part of the person's body. So
safety shaft.
That's right. The safety reflectors, right? The reflectors, I think that this, if you're allowed to wear glasses on Shabbos, not everyone does. The briskies don't wear glasses on Shabbos, but anyone else who wears glasses on Shabbos, what's the heter? It's not a beggar, glasses. It's not a tachshit in the sense of it doesn't look beautiful, but to the post can write that anything that protects the body, by definition, is considered to be a tachshit. So if a person is, let's say a person has a band-aid on, so a band-aid is also considered to be like a tachshit. A person has a cast, that's considered to be a tachshit. Says glasses, that's considered to be a tachshit. So a person is wearing a reflector, gold reflectors to protect the body. So that's also considered to be a tachshit. So that's what Shlomo Zalman says also, even though a moch is not exactly there to protect the body, but it's serving a real purpose. So it's considered to be almost like bottle to the rest of the body. So the HBH, there are some who are machmer on this, who say that the one should be careful, others who are not. The time when I get the shayla, for those women who even know that such a thing as a shayla, the time that I get the shayla is Yom Kippur. That's the time when women go out. That's the time when women are walking in the street. The Benesh Moshes. Now the woman, she wants to bench lach, and then she wants to go to shul. So, again, if you live in Didik, there's an Erev. Remember, we lived in the Heights before there was an Erev. Those remember in the Friedrich Kedaris. So there was no Erev. There was for sure no Erev across the street. There wasn't, when we first moved to the Heights, there wasn't even an Erev on one side of Amsterdam Avenue. So first they built on one side, and then eventually, years later, they crossed the street. So I remember when used to be a whole tuk, whenever the women wanted to cross the street to come to shul, so they weren't allowed to carry anything. So I remember in those years, so we sometimes get a shayla, Ramesh, before Kol Nidre. The woman wants to bench lach, and boom, she happens to be having a mocha that night, and now she wants to know, am I allowed to cross it? Do I have to wait? I'm going to miss half a davening in Yom Kippur night, I have to wait until Tzitzke Chavim. So the one answer was that maybe we should tell her to put the moch in across the street. She should. Then she can't do it. She wants the benchlach first. The benchlach will apply. It's starting to get very, very labidic. Again, this whole thing is not so partial. The whole thing is a questionable thing in the first place. Anyway, so that's in terms of the shirayim, in terms of last week's shirayim, in terms of moch. So now we begin our new sugya, and I just came to the realization that's the next path of our. We just finished part one, and I didn't put out the part two of my regret. I mean, I have them, but I didn't bring them here today. So we'll have to say this part Tosh about best. Hopefully, by next week, we'll try to get. If we have a shir next week, if we're in the schedule for next week, we'll try to get part two. So part two begins right where part one left off. So we just had the woman who did a hefsek tahara, she did or didn't do a moch, and now she's ready to roll. She's ready to do to begin shiva nikiyah. What exactly does shiva nikiyah mean? So the Torah tells us about the institution of shiva nikiyah. The sofer law shiva is yom yachat yitar. Of course, in the Torah, shiva nikiyah are only required for a zava, which Bisman had said all women are considered to be suffix zavos. Sometimes a woman is really a zava min haTorah, she would require shemikia min haTorah, and more often than not, it's probably only a cheshash b'derabbanan, based on the chalas of Rebbe, and b'nos Yisrael, all the things that we spoke about in the past. But the bottom line is shemikia are required. There's absolutely no question about it, that it's what the Gemara calls halacha psuka, that b'nosach b'atzban, shemikia are absolutely necessary in the Yikra Din without any question whatsoever. So we have to make sure that we understand what shemikia are supposed to be. So the Mishnah, in the end of Maseches Nida, talks about something, which is hard to understand where it's coming from. The Mishnah all of a sudden begins to discuss the requirement of doing bedikos during Shivanikiyim. It's so obvious to the Tanoim that a woman has to check herself during the course of Shivanikiyim, the Mishnah never bothers to tell us how do we know that. The Gemara never bothers to tell us how do we know that. That's like, that was the given. The only thing that Tanoim are arguing about is how many bedikos is the bare minimum bedieved. If a woman forgot to do some of the bedikas in the middle, so that's where the Tanoim start. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shur, Rabbi Akiva have a whole machlekes at Tanoim. A woman forgot to do every day of bedikas. She did some and didn't do others. What's the status with the other? The starting point of that entire Mishnah is that of course she do bedikas. And the question is, well, why should she do bedikas? Who told her that she's required to do bedikas? So the simplest pshat is that in the Chumash, it doesn't say in the Chumash do bedikas. The Torah says that you have to wait 7 days. 7 days are up, she goes to the mikvah. So maybe the whole institution of bedikas is only to rub on it. That would make it very easy for us. Then you don't need a pasuk, you don't need a mock, you don't need a halach moshesina. It was just a chumra mid the rabbanon. We can understand why the chumra made the chumra. We want to be really, really sure that we're not missing anything. But maybe the whole thing is on a mid the rabbanon. So there is a comment of the Beis Yosef that doesn't seem to bear out that idea. There is a machleke satanoim, which hopefully we'll talk about a little bit more in the future. There's a machleke satanoim. What is the bare bone minimum amount of bedikas that are acceptable b'diavad? So the Mishnah talks about bedikas rishon shvi, that the woman did a bedika on day one. This is addition to the hafsiktara. Hafsiktara is not day one. Hafsiktara is the prerequisite to get to day one. So on day one she checks herself, and on the seventh day she checks herself. The lo gubaka beratai, and she didn't do any bedikas for the rest. So the Mishnah quotes a three machlekes atanayim. Is that totally good? Is that not real good? Is it partially good? What the halacha? So we have the paskin, the Gemara paskins halacha that that's okay. And if you do bedikas on day one and day seven, so bedieved at least, that's going to be acceptable. So then there's a further machlokes in the Gemara, machlokes amarayim. What if she didn't even do day one and day seven? She did day one or day seven. So the Gemara has a machlokes. What Rabbi Eliezer meant? Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanu, said that Rishon and Shvi are okay bedieved. And the Gemara says Allah k'tvarav. The Gemara says that we very rarely paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. This is one of the four cases that we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer, even against Rabbi Shul, even against Rabbi Akiva, against the other Tanoim. The Gemara says explicitly Allah Rabbi Eliezer. So we follow Rabbi Eliezer's view that Rishon Ushvi is good enough b'diavad. So the Gemara says, further machlokes, did Rabbi Eliezer mean Rishon Ushvi? What did Rabbi Eliezer mean? Rishon Oshvi. That's a big machlokes. Adi Yamazah, that's a big machlokes in the Amarah, machlokes Rishon. Today it's Shulchan Aruch. So the Beis Yosef, when he quotes that question, he says it's a big machlekes in the Gemara, big machlekes Rishon, unresolved. So the Beis Yosef has the following very, very cryptic line. The Beis Yosef writes that since we're talking about a cheshash and it's a kares, so therefore we're going to be machmer in the Shaila. Even though we follow Rabbi Eliezer, who's the Mekel, that the Gemara says, so that we don't have to be machmer against the Gemara. But since it's unresolved in the Gemara to be shown him, whether we take the Chumra version of Rabbi Eliezer or the cooler version of Rabbi Eliezer, we have no right to take the lenient version. We have to be more machmir because of the chashash v'sakaris. So all the Acharonim jump into the Beis Yosef and say, chashash v'sakaris? What is sakaris? Must be that the requirement of bedikas is a real din min haTorah. And if the bedikas are not done up to par, so then the whole shivnikim is bas l'mavotel. If the shivnikim are not acceptable, then the woman is still in Zava, which is in sakaris. So for the fact that the Beis Yosef is machmir, Hilchas Bedikos, to treat Bedikos as being a suffix deraisa, a suffix sakares, it shows that the Beis Yosef understood that Bedikos are really required at a level of deraisa. That's the assumption of many, many, many Echron. Not everybody, but many of the Echron read the Beis Yosef Kipshutai, that the requirement of Bedikos to actually Kim are real din deraisa. But the question becomes, where does it come from? And even more problematic is it doesn't seem to make any sense. How in the world could there be a requirement of Bedikos Me'atara for the following reason? So, Reni the Chavis Das, Reni the Baal HaSivus, is the first one to raise this red flag on this opinion. Says the Chavis Das makes the following judgment. Says, we all know that the Riyas Dam only poses a problem if it's Behagosha. Minat Torah, if a woman finds a stain, Minat Torah, that's not the Minat Torah, it's only Nida if it's Behagosha. It's only Zava Behagosha, Achetagish Bripsara. So, says the Chavis Das, explain to me, please, what exactly are you looking for? The woman wakes up in the morning, the first day of Shiva Nikiyam, and she says, oh, I have to check to make sure I'm not bleeding. So, what are you checking for? If you felt something, and you know that you're bleeding, so what are you wasting your time doing? You know you're bleeding. If you didn't feel anything, even if you're not bleeding, it doesn't matter. So what are you checking for? What is the goal of checking? If you're checking for dam, that's behargosha, you had argosha, so you know you're bleeding. If you're checking for blood, shloge argosha, what are you looking for? It's not, that doesn't mean anything anyway. It's irrelevant to halacha. That was the Chavos Das problem that he posed. So to solve that problem, Chavos Das came up with an unbelievable chiddush. He comes up and he says that requirement of hargosha, in order to create a chuznida, in order to create a chuzava, that's the creative chuznida. That's the creative chuzava. Once a chuznida and zava were already created, and now we're talking about being so sere in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam, says the Chavos Das, dam shalom b'hargosha is so sere, that even dam that comes about without any sensation, any feeling, anything, that's so sere in the love of deraisa, and that's what we do b'dikas for. The woman is walking around on the first day of Shiva Nikiyam. Maybe she didn't see the blood. Maybe she didn't feel the blood. Maybe it was Shalom Bar Gosha. And we have no right to close our eyes and say, well, Shalom Bar Gosha, who cares? No, we care. Because Dam Shalom Bar Gosha is Soyser. So Dam Shalom Bar Gosha is not metame to start with, but Dam Shalom Bar Gosha can unravel a Shiva Nikiyam. And that's why Min HaTorah you have to bedik us. Because we have to be certain every single day of Shiva Nikiyam, you better be certain that there's no blood here. And even though the chachili should do bedikas every day, that's what the Tanoim or Bilaz was making. All right, you did a little bit at the beginning, a little bit at the end, so probably there was nothing in between also. And maybe even if you just did one at the beginning, with the end, maybe that's also good enough. But to say, to ignore bedikas altogether, that would be a bitl min haTorah, that would unravel the entire Shiva Nikiyam min haTorah.
Is that because B'zman Zeh we don't know what our
Gashem is? No, because they didn't, all right.
I'm not sure about, no, I'm saying.
No, this is back to Moshe Rabbeinu's days. This is back to even the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, when supposedly we know what our Gashem is, and the woman say, I don't feel a thing. We believe her. We know you don't feel anything. It's true but irrelevant. Because unless you're sure that there was no bleeding, even Dam Shalom Bar Gosha will be suicidal.
We normally, I know there's an exception once in a while, but we normally don't say the Chachilas and B'dievas and the Raisas.
It's not like a Chachilas and B'dievas, it's saying that...
Or you're saying you really should do it every day. If you did do it every day, it's okay. It's a very straight...
Okay. So we're going to have to talk about that a little bit more. Hopefully down the line we talk about the Chachilas by Matirim. As it says indeed that it says you don't say lechatchilas in the avid by some derisa, some you do and some you don't. Okay, well we'll have to get to that. Got to come back in about 8 months from now. I'm sure we'll be back a few times. But okay. So this is the Chavos Das solution to this riddle. What are you doing with digas b'torah for? Take away, there's no bad gosh altogether. The ramifications of this Chavos Das are frightening because according to this Chavos Das, what just disappeared in the air is all of the chuskam in Drosh of Nikiyam. Because if you remember all the way back to the beginning when we talked about how come there's a difference in something, how come if a woman finds a stain, so we say, don't worry about it, it's not so terrible. Why? Well, the Mishnah says it is terrible. The Mishnah says motzi kesef is a problem, but the Gemara says, it's only a problem with the Rabban. Min haTorah walks someone with her anyway, because it's shaloa b'hagasha, and therefore we have so many kulos in Uchus Ksamim, with the premise that we're only dealing with the Rabbanan Dikah problem in the first place. What the Chavos Das just did is that he took all of the Kulos of Ksamim and threw them out the window in the Moshe Nikiyam. From that Ramamurim, that there's a Kulos of Ksamim, and the Ksamim are only with the Rabbanan. She didn't feel anything, it's just a stain, so it's only with the Rabbanan. That's true to create the status of Nidas. But once she's ready in Nida and to get out of being in Nida, so the Chavos Das just closed the door and all the Kulos of Ksamim, because Min haTorah, you don't even require a Hagosha. That would be mind-boggling if that would be true. So the Chavos Das himself tones down his own chumrah. The Chavos Das says, if you go back to the original sugya of Ksamim, take a look, he says, he predated Bris, it's a Bris Ketorah. Says the Chavos Das, there are two dinim of Ksamim. There are two distinct kulas of Ruchas Ksamim, and sometimes people confuse the two, says the Chavos Das, let's make it very clear what those two categories of Ksamim are. There is a Mishnah in Masechet Nida. It tells us a very fascinating story. The Mishnah tells us Rabbi Akiva was sitting with his Talmidim in the Beis Medrash, and a woman came to the side of Beis Medrash, got Rabbi Akiva's attention, threw Rabbi Akiva out, and she comes and she shows a shayla to Rabbi Akiva, and she says, I just found the stain, I just found the kesem on a garment. So Rabbi Akiva asks her, he says, do you have a anything that's a wound? Do you have any irritation now? Questions that we would ask Bisman is that. So the woman says, I don't have anything now. So Rabbi Akiva asked her, and the Mishnah quotes the dialogue, no, verbatim the discussion between Rabbi Akiva and this woman. So then Rabbi Akiva asked her, he said, well, did you used to have? Did you have anything in the area recently? So she said, yes, I did. So he asked her again, has it healed yet? So she said, kind of. So he asked her again, he says, is it a type of a wound that could become re-irritated again? So she said, yes. So Rabbi Akiva said, it's mutter. That was about the mission said back and forth the conversation with Rabbi Akiva and this woman, Rabbi Akiva Kapaska, that is mutter. So then the Mishnah says, Rol Tamidim, the Tamidim saw what was going on, and they were mistaken, the Tamidim went, be cooler from the rabbi, but what's going on? They didn't understand what's going on. He keeps almost like prompting her with the information. He's helping her be Mekel. So Tamidim didn't know what was going on. So Rabbi Akiva turns to the Tamidim and says, it's a fascinating Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Akiva turns to the Tamidim and says, what are you looking at me? Like, so, why are we stuck with him? What's bothering you? We have a tradition that Hilchus Kesavim always goes Lekula, and anytime we can find any way to be Mekel, it has to be realistic, it has to be kindness. We make a stuff like that, but if it's a realistic cool enough summum, then we have a right to be metal of the summum. So the Gemara explains why is that? Because Ksum is only Midrabanan. So the Chavos Das says, if you look at that entire sugya, that Ksum is only Midrabanan, the Mishnah never says the word Hagasha. The Mishnah doesn't quote the drasha about Hagasha. It doesn't say exactly why Ksum is Midrabanan. So the Chavos Das explains what that Mishnah means is as follows. Anytime there's a suffix, where the blood came from, minatur, that's mutter. Suffolk, nida, suffolk, mokor of hilchus nida, is lakula. Not that all shal of hilchus nida are lakula, but if there's a suffolk where the blood came from the mokor, or came from somewhere else, minatur, we have to be makel. Moshal ma'ad of adoyme, there's a din of suffolk mamzes mutter minatur, suffolk orlo, chutz lawrence is mutter minatur. There are certain din minatur that kach nem l'moshe b'sinai, sveikas al lakula. So Chavos Das claims, if you read that Mishnah properly, so you'll understand that Rabbi Akiva was saying is that any time there's any suffix where the blood came from, it's a suffix. Maybe it came from the Makkah. Makkah healed, maybe the Makkah reopened. So if there's any legitimate suffix to say the blood came from somewhere else, by definition, the Torah never asked such doubt. That has nothing to do with Hagosha. That's not the Parsha of Hagosha. Din number two, says the Chavos Das. The second part of the story, says the Chavos Das, one of a woman knows with absolute certainty where the blood's coming from. She has no makkah, she went to the doctor, I'm telling you this is uterine bleeding, believe she himself gets uterine bleeding, but she didn't feel anything. She had no sensation, she had no superstavalach, no nizdazavara, no psichasavara, whatever the definition of Hagosha is. The din is, it's still mutter in the Torah. That has nothing to do with the Rabbi Akiva story. That's a separate drasha called Vipsara Achatagish Vipsara. So if you look carefully at the Gemara has two different psukim for these two different dinim. The Mishnah Rabbi Akiva quotes a drasha, Ki Azuv Zov Damot Dam Velo Kesem, that a stain is mutter, and the Gemara later on in either quotes from Shlomo Shmuel Achatagish Vipsara. Says the Chavos Das, they're two different psukim, because they're two different halachas. One is the din of Safek Kesem is mutter, Safek Dam is mutter. The other din is, even though it's Vadei Dam, it's still mutter, Achatagish Vipsara. Says the Chavos Das, when was I Mechadesh that everything changes during Shiva Dikiyim? That's vis-a-vis the second din. The requirement of Hagosha doesn't apply for Stiras Shiva Dikiyim. But the first din, the din of a Suffolk in Uchaz Dam, why did that apply to? That's a din of Kaltakul. That's a din even in the middle of Shiva Dikiyim. So says the Chavos Das, if a woman comes with a kesem in the middle of Shiva Dikiyim and says, I don't know, is it from the front? Is it a hemorrhoid? I'm not sure what the... So says the Chavos Das, the regular standards of Ksav apply. Because I never included that in my chumrah, says the Chavos Das. That's Rabbi Akiva's Mishnah. That's down below kesem. If there's any real potential that this blood came from somewhere else besides the uterus, that's what the Tari Tiro say. If a woman comes and says, I know the blood came from my uterus, but I didn't feel anything, that's where the problem is during Shiva Dikiyim. Remember, Sisri Tayra, it's involved in Pshitil Tayra, but it comes from what's it based on? What's the lumbus behind it? So, Rabbi Shechta is fond of quoting that perhaps it's based on the following, that this din that you require Hagosha in order to get a woman to becoming a Nida, so what that means is as follows, to get the ball rolling, you require Hagosha. Let's say she saw Dabra Hagosha at first, and now 5 days later, in the middle of Shiva Nikiyim, she sees Dabra Shalom Hagosha. The halacha says that the stira is a continuation of the previous riyah. When a woman is seiser in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam, it's not pshat that she had a riyah's dam, it made her into an ida, and now that's history, and now let's discuss stira. No. What stira in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam means is that we view this as a hemshech of the original riyah. So if the original riyah was b'hagasha, even though she's not physically being margish, halachically she's being margish. So the din of hagasha has to fall by the wayside in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam. You can't talk about there's a requirement of hagasha in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam. She already was yetzi hagasha, she already had hagasha. So the dam that started the ball rolling a week ago is chal on this riyah as well, and therefore there's no requirement of hagasha to make her into a nida. But the first din of Rabbi Akiva, we don't even know it's dam. Maybe there's blood from our finger. We don't even know where the blood's coming from. So that din, if we don't even know where the blood's coming from, that would be okay even in Shiva Nikiyam. There's all razzle dazzle shtickle Torah from the Chavis Das. The issue with the Chavis Das is that this would be an unbelievable chumrah. If we would follow this Chavis Das, this could potentially mamish change all the chesed of Bizman Hazeh in terms of Kavli Shiva Nikiyam. A woman comes with a shayla, first day of Shiva Nikiyam, and she's wiping herself. She finds a little bit of blood on the toilet paper. She has no irritations there. She has no makas. She goes to the doctor. There's nothing there. We know exactly where this blood came from. The blood came from the uterus. It was a little bit of remnant, a little bit of leftover from the period. But she found it in a dover she'en a makabal tuma. She found it in a dover she'en a makabal tuma. So normally we think that's okay. What's the problem? Toilet paper. We assume it's not a moisha. We generally pass in that toilet paper is not a makabal tuma. So her attitude is great. It's not a makabal tuma. Finish it and don't worry about it. Wait a second, the Chavis Das. What right do you have to be making on the form she'en makabal tuma? That's predicated the assumption that it's only a kesem, it's only a drabon in any way, and it's come built in the kula of davar she'en makabal tuma. But wait, says the Chavis Das, we have a deraisa problem here. The only thing that made it drabon is because there was no hagosha. We know where it's coming from. It's not suffix, it's not kesem in the first sense of Rabbi Akiva's sense. It's a kesem because there's no hagosha. But according to the Chavis Das, you don't need a hagasha in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam. So it turns out any blood found in any davar she'en makabal tuma is a problem. But let's say a woman finds dam on a davar tzavua, something that's colored. Usually she's not wearing colors this time. Sometimes you can have a situation where even in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam, she finds dam on a davar tzavua. So, nope, sorry, because that's a kulu ksamim. There are no kulu ksamim in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam. That would change everything. So Shlomo Zalman writes that he thinks that nobody follows the Chavis Das Halacha. He says he thinks it's against the Beferish Ramah. The Ramah writes, the Pemol in Hilchos Nida, that if a woman finds a kesem less than a gris, even during Shiva Nikiyam, even in the first 3 days of Shiva, even on day one, she can be megal. A kesem pachat the gris is mutter. Why is a kesem pachat the gris mutter? Because you think it's coming from somewhere else. You really believe it's coming from the bed bugs? We spoke about that in the past. Come on, you know, it's not coming from the bugs. We know exactly where it's coming from. She comes, wakes up the first time, she finds a little spot of blood on her underwear. We know exactly where it's coming from. And it's put there anyway. They're mush, they're preferish, it's put there anyway. So it says Rosh Hashanah, and the Chavis Das is right, that any blood that you know is coming from her, but just because there's no hagasha, you can't be mekel min haTorah in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam. Says the Shlomo Zalman, how do the ABCs of Hilchos need to play out as man as that? He says every woman in the Shiva Nikiyam gets a little bit of steers, a little bit of something on toilet paper, a little bit of something less than a grist. The Rabbanim, just to close their eye, everything's mutter, it's mutter, it's mutter, it's less than a grist, it's like a bit of a kudu tumah, everything's mutter. Says the Shlomo Zalman, if the Chavis Das is right, that would undermine all the way we practice Shiva Nikiyam as man as that. So he says, he can't believe that we follow this, and nobody follows this Chavis Das. But this Chavis Das, the longest, what made the Chavis Das come to the conclusion is because this otherwise very, very difficult question, how can you have B'dikas min haTorah? And the other hand, if there's a requirement of Hagosha, what exactly are you checking for? So if we mention next week, we'll see how other Achronim solve that same problem. Some Achronim have a little bit of a watered-down version similar to the Chavis Das, and other Achronim answer the question in a radically different way, which will put up the Snida back into the realm where we know it from. So let's show next week, we'll try to see the other approaches in the Gdol Achronim that are solved as well. Right, so Mitzvah Shem, people still be around next Sunday? The others still around? Hopefully next week will be the last year before the summer. We'll try to get the next books if we can. By next week, I'll be ready for the summer.